Good afternoon, good morning, and good evening. Welcome from West Africa to all our valued members and guests. I'm Chantal Carrington, CEO of Invest Africa. It is my pleasure to present to you today's Invest Africa 2024 Outlook for Lucifer in Africa, the sixth and the final, so maybe we saved the best one for last, in this webinar series, which also included West, East, South, North, and Francophone Africa. I'm keen to hear, for example, what the experts think about the transition to clean energy for a sustainable energy future, and whether they think that the international investors are keen to support pivotal projects in Lucifer in Africa. So without any further ado, I'm going to hand you over to our wonderful moderator for today, Constanza from Africa Specialty Risks, who is joined by Renato from Miranda and Tiago from IFC. Also, a quick reminder that we will have an opportunity for Q&A towards the end of the webinar. So please submit what's on your mind and we will try our best to cover all of that. So over to you, Constanza.
Thank you, Chantal, and Invest Africa for inviting me to moderate this session. As Chantal mentioned, I'm Constanza and I'm a Strategic Partnerships and Communications Manager at Africa Specialty Risks. We provide reinsurance across Africa, primarily focusing on corporate and specialty business. So everything from your political risk insurance, trade credit, political violence, and we have exposure to 49 African countries. So I'll start off by introducing our two distinguished guests. Firstly, we have Renato Guerra de Almeida, who is a partner at Miranda e Associados, a Portuguese law firm. He has over 20 years of experience covering clients across multiple jurisdictions. So these include countries in Angola, Mozambique, São Tomé and Príncipe, and all the way to Southeast Asia and Timor-Leste. His expertise covers various projects from real estate, foreign investment, and oil and gas. With respect to our second panelist, Tiago. Tiago is a senior investment officer at the International Finance Corporation, also a member of the World Bank Group. He is based in Luanda, and Tiago focuses on infrastructure, primarily for Angola and Mozambique. And I actually had the pleasure of meeting Tiago before he joined the IFC and during his tenure at BII, where he also focused on infrastructure investments. So welcome, Tiago, and welcome, Renat. I'm sure we're going to have a very engaging discussion. And to give a bit of quick context to the audience, there are six Portuguese-speaking African countries, namely Angola, Cape Verde, Guinea-Bissau, Mozambique, São Tomé e Príncipe, and most recently Equatorial Guinea, who ascended to the community of the Portuguese language countries. We'll kick off with a quick overview of the Lusophone African region. So Tiago, I'd like to hand over to you so you could provide us with a quick snapshot of the current economic and development landscape of Lusophone Africa, and perhaps highlighting some of the considerations that are shaping the trajectory of these economies.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Thank you again to Invest Africa for the invite, and to you, Constanza, for the kind introduction. Just a quick disclaimer. I mean, by no means I am an economist, so it's just going to give you high level views and sort of bullets that our team has been kindly prepared for myself. And also another disclaimer, I mean, as you mentioned, Constanza, you know, whilst we have, several Lusophone countries, my area of expertise indeed, it's Angola, Mozambique, and now I'm also responsible for Namibia, which is not a Lusophone country, but it's also where I've been spending quite a bit of time. I mean, just to set the lay of the land, and speaking about Angola, where I'm based and originally from, as most of you will know, the country is going through some, economic strains. We basically have a very rich oil-dependent country, which is seeing this sort of oil revenue, reducing over time. Primarily due to production reducing as expected, without any new major discoveries coming online, And at the same time, which is really a difficult position to be, you're seeing quite a significant population growth. And so that, of course, puts a lot of pressure on the government side in terms of, you know, social expenditure and capital expenditure to support that that need. But at the same time, the financing model that you've been using as a country keeps allowing you less flexibility, again, declining oil revenues and increased pressure on the sort of estate expenses. And of course, you know, which is also hampering Angola at the moment, which is the high levels of debt with after COVID and all of that. Moratoriums, you know, Angola is back to having to fulfill these obligations. That, for example, as during 2023, what we saw quite a big devaluation from the local currency to the dollar, which is primarily due, not necessarily because of, you know, the revenues in for the country in foreign currency have suddenly depleted, but what has happened is that one of the biggest players in the FX market, which is the government itself, suddenly had to, you know, well, not suddenly, but from 2023 had to start make large repayments of debt. So those are dollars that had to be funneled for meeting debt servicing obligations and no longer available for the local FX market. That, of course, you know, the FX rate changing creates, again, pressures on inflation to Angola because a lot still is imported. You know, cost of living, and really putting, you know, a lot of pressure on, of course, on the, in the population in general, but also for the government. So that is the resulting effect, which I think is important for our discussion today, is that it also is limiting the government's ability to continue to borrow in US dollars, to be able to support its public investment program from education, infrastructure, social sectors, and so on, and which in a way supports or should incentivize the government to look for different financing models to continue the development of the country and more so the development of the infrastructure that the country much needs. You know, and one of the things is IFC, we've been trying to help the government and trying to develop some concepts, is of course what our mandate asks us to do, which is trying to bring private sector into this, particularly into the infrastructure space in the country. Just speaking quickly about Mozambique, I mean, Mozambique, you know, to become an oil and gas rich country, still not there yet. So it's of course a small economy, similar population. Of course, GDP per capita is different, just by virtue of the, you know, of the small economy and the base they're coming from. Nevertheless, I mean, again, similar post-COVID and pandemic, you know, the country is starting to see interesting pickup in economic growth. But by virtue not only of, as some of you know, Mozambique has become now an LNG exporter through its Coral South project, which is an offshore facility. So that, of course, has helped the, you know, the indicators to improve. As we all expect, hopefully this year, we will see some announcements regarding the large onshore projects, which really will start moving the needle, I presume, in terms of revenues to government and overall GDP contribution from the sector. You know, what's important for our discussion, I suppose, it's, you know, the outlook is positive. I think we all keep saying the same for quite a number of years, but I think, you know, at least I'm hopeful that this year will be a year where really we see that process starting to go in motion. However, in the meantime, of course, you know, Mozambique, similar to Angola, is still, of course, facing some pressures at the macro level. You know, there is high levels of indebtedness. But again, all that is relative, right? Because debt to GDP is also a function of the size of the GDP. And of course, if, you know, through the gas exports, and you know, additional investment coming into the country to the gas and non-gas sectors, of course, that ratio can change very quickly. From an FX perspective, I mean, we get that question quite a bit. I mean, since the pandemic, the FX rate has been pretty stable. Some economists say it's not really due to, in part due to the fundamentals, of course, of the economy, but also to what we call, central bank moral suasion. So not persuasion, but moral suasion, where, of course, being a free floating sort of FX market, they are still, some pressures to try and keep the rate as stable as possible. So I think the outlook for Mozambique, generally speaking, I mean, I'm relatively positive. I mean, from our side, it's a very interesting country where IFC has been doing quite a bit, particularly in the infrastructure sector, friendly to the private sector investment overall. And much needed, because as one can deduct, the government itself has limited ability to raise finance or funds to continue again develop the infrastructure that the country needs. So I think maybe I'll just stop there. Don't know if I already used my time allocation.
That's good. You're well on time. Thank you, Tiago. I think considering that both these countries have relatively high unemployment rates, and I think both, for example, Angola and Mozambique governments have realized that they need private sector support in order to kickstart some of the infrastructure projects rather than these being just carried out by themselves. And so, Renato, turning over to you, I wondered if you could provide us a bit of insight into some of these infrastructure projects in both Angola and Mozambique, just due to the sheer size of these two countries. We'll focus on them, and then perhaps highlighting some of the dynamics of collaborations with foreign partners, which is important for this audience, shedding some light into the commercial and legal considerations that have played a key sort of element into the success of these projects.
Thank you, Constanza. Thank you, Thiago, and thanks to everyone who has joined in. First of all, a brief thank you notes to Invest Africa for the invitation and for the opportunity of bringing up the Lusophone economies to the discussion, which I believe are worth mentioning as fast-paced economies, which are expected to have as Thiago said, the outlook is good, and I have to agree on that. And we have seen recently, and we continue to expect throughout 2024 to have some interesting developments in both countries, specifically Angola and Mozambique. I would point out from the outset that there is a similarity in respect of both countries, which is that of the intention for economic diversification. Angola and Mozambique have an intention to diversify its economy beyond oil. This will not be easy, of course. Historically, this has been the major source of revenue, and it is expected to continue to be. But the governments of both countries have been focusing on sectors such as agriculture, mining, tourism, to attract foreign investment, in addition to public investments in infrastructures that have been carried out. For example, Angola, in terms of these sectors, in order to attract investment, agriculture, mining, tourism, we may point out some initiatives that have occurred, for example, for tourism effects, which is indeed sector that the government wishes to develop, which includes the investment in new infrastructures, such as a new airport in Angola. But there are also new rules on entry visa exemption, simplification of tourist visa procedures. There is an ongoing process to attract foreign investment throughout the privatization program, which intends to sell out a number of state-owned companies and assets to the private sector. There is a clear investment in the mining sector. We have seen the return of some of the majors to the country, and this includes prospects in sectors other than diamonds. So we are talking about raw materials and projects for obtaining minerals for the energy transition. So we see infrastructure development in Angola as a priority sector for the government. We have seen in 2023 the signing of the trilateral Lobito Corridor Agreement between the government of the Republic of Angola and the governments of Congo and Zambia. This intends to facilitate the transit throughout these countries and to support the development on the railway sector. We have seen a very clear intention to support projects in electricity sector, in clean energy, notably the rural electrification plan, which has been approved in 2023. And which aims to bring electricity to a number of rural locations throughout Angola. This will be followed by investments in the transmission line. This will also be supported with investments in the water sector, which have obtained new rules for facilitate private investment in this sector. And then there is a clear signal that Angola has provided to foreign investment, which I believe Mozambique is yet to follow, and which is that of the ease of doing business. Angola has taken steps to improve its business environment by implementing reforms to streamline administrative procedures, reduce bureaucracy, and make it easier for companies to operate. This includes new regulations on commercial licensing, new regulations on industrial licensing, which are pivotal to boost the national economy and to cut red tape. There has been a reform in the Code of Administrative Litigation Procedure, in the rules that set out how the authorities are supposed to intervene and under which deadlines with private investors. So there is a new legal framework to the incentive for national production. So we have seen this number of initiatives from a legal perspective, and as an attorney, I'm more focused on these types of initiatives. But we have seen a clear investment in measures to facilitate the ease of doing business. Turning out to Mozambique very quickly, the outlook is also good. The GDP expected growth is expected to rise. But I would say that we are perhaps still in a bit of a standstill in respect of Mozambique. We do have positive indicators that the LNG project will go ahead, and this will be fundamental to trigger, or maybe fundamental to trigger a whole series of other projects that may follow. We have seen some investment projects in the energy sector. For example, we have the Namacha wind farm to highlight, and we expect, or it has been advocated that there will be some further investments on the transmission lines also. I would say that in Mozambique, being an election year, this is also a very point that is worth mentioning, because being an election year, this of course may play a role in the decisions to invest or not in the country, but in general terms, Mozambique has been a stable country, so to speak, in terms of political environment. We will need to see how this will play out.
And Renato, if I may, sort of given the election coming up, sort of do you see your clients already, you know, raising queries with you regarding what areas they should perhaps take into consideration, given sort of what the elections may bring to those, I don't know, existing projects, existing MOUs in place?
This, as in most countries, election year is also, having elections is also relevant, is always relevant. In Africa in particular, this place some additional relevance. But I think that more than the elections, which are of course relevant, it is the decision on LNG project that is expected to occur that may, in our opinion, trigger a different business environment or not in Mozambique. But as Tiago pointed out, the indicators are positive. So the outlook in the sub-regional region is also good, leading to higher usage of Mozambique's logistics infrastructure. So I would say that in both countries the outlook is good and there are interesting opportunities in a variety of sectors.
Thank you, Renato, for that overview. In that case, we can move on to our second question, in this case for Tiago. I think, Tiago, given the IFC's mandate to finance private sector-led projects, it'd be interesting to hear sort of what are the opportunities and equally IFC's sort of main goals and challenges that you've observed in your role since January 2021 for opportunities in Africa, Angola and Mozambique for that private sector.
Yeah. No, thanks, Constanza. Maybe just a quick note on Renato. Renato's point earlier, just to point out as well, particularly for Angola, which I don't know if some of you maybe are not aware, but Angola actually passed the legislation recently that actually is now a visa-free country for almost like 95 countries around the world. So, which used to be a bit of a bottleneck and a strong nuisance for people to come and, you know, explore business opportunities. So that hurdle again has been removed. And so I hope that it does boost not only business in general, but tourism as well. And so it's a positive step. in terms of more concretely, you know, sort of opportunities and, you know, what sort of IFC has been kind of looking at or involved or trying to push, starting with Angola. And so Angola, as a lot of you may know, has historically been a government controlled economy, right? So essentially the government is the one investing and in the sector once again. And so there was always a pretty limited private sector involvement and investment in the sector. Maybe the telecom sector, where some initiatives have happened over the last 20 years. But the reality is today, if we look at other sectors, it's pretty much government's public investment program. That, of course, as I said, is now starting to change because we have a lot of pressure on the government's capacity to continue to borrow. And the needs keep growing, right? I mean, still a lot to be done, and particularly considering a fast-growing population. So there is really limited track record in Angola in terms of, you know, PPPs and how these things work. And of course, you know, the government institution and you know are equally less experience with those sorts of financing models. So that in itself it's a bit of a constraint, but it's part of you know the World Bank Group and IFC in particular to sort of assist governments to try and develop that knowledge and experience. So I mean, in terms of you know where we're seeing opportunities and you know where we are, you know, putting effort in helping the government and private sector players to, you know, to make this, you know, private sector participation to occur. And you know, it has been mostly around three sectors, you know. So the first one, of course, the power sector, where Angola still has, you know, relatively low electrification rate. And so still some investment that needs to be done in generation. But also, and most importantly, in transmission as well. So, you know, there have been some attempts in the past to develop a classic, what we call IPP projects. That has not really happened yet, you know, because, as I said, there are some wants to build what we call a bankable framework in terms of the different contracts. And maybe Renato can speak a bit about that. Mm-hmm. We need some commitments from the government to these projects. We need certain financial guarantees being provided to, the contracts. And so this is something that it's new to the government. So there is a bit of a learning curve that needs to happen. And we're playing quite an important role in working currently, actually, with the Ministry of Energy and Water, doing some sort of what we call advisory work. So power, but mostly, and I see a lot of people and news players, big players that are looking to develop projects in generation, clean energy, as you mentioned. But the reality is Angola actually has today quite a significant generation capacity, mostly due to large investments done by the government in the past in big hydros, as we call it. So I think for Angola, the focus really should be in developing, continue to develop the transmission system, high voltage, so it can connect not only the different parts of the country, but also connect the country to the wider networks, systems available in Africa, particularly the SAPP, which Angola is a member, but not connected. So it's a non-connected member. And I think that could be an interesting opportunity for Angola to explore. So we are also talking with them currently in conceptualizing what we call transmission PPPs. And so I think it's an area of interest. Equally on generation, but I guess, the urgent need, I presume it's more on the transmission rather than generation. Then on the transport side, I think some of you mentioned already the Lobito Corridor, the new airport. And so the trend here, I think it's more of an opportunity to private sector to come and play a role as a concessionaire, since I suppose a lot of the investment has already been made by the government on its own balance sheet, right? So so what we're seeing is what we call recycling of assets. So it's infrastructure that has already been built by the government, which now the government has an interest to monetize that infrastructure, bring private sector knowledge and efficiency. And in some cases, like the Lobito Corridor, you may also need some additional CapEx. There is now the ongoing bidding process for the new Luanda Airport concession. So we're quite interested to see how that unfolds. And of course, it's not IFC's priority to finance acquisition or, what we call concession fees. So then the asset is transferred to the private sector for a given period under a concession. We prefer to finance, build new CapEx, a new power plant, a new airport. But again, Angola is a country that is in transition. So I think these efforts by the government to apply those models to existing infrastructure is very interesting. And so we're definitely looking to help with that. Then the telecom sector, I think it's a sector that is interesting. Angola has a sizable telecom sector, and there's a lot of investment as well that needs to happen. The transition from 4G to 5G, you have more, you need to expand broadband access, you need infrastructure such as data centers and so on. And this historically has been more friendly to private sector. The reality is today with all these different things that have happened in Angola, a lot of these companies and assets are still in the government's hands. So I think one needs to pay attention to what's going to happen in the program that Renato mentioned in terms of the government's privatization program. So we have companies like Angola Telecom or even Unitel and others, which, I presume one at some point could present opportunities for investors. Then water, we are actually helping the government on something in water at the moment, more again on an advisory basis, but, bear with us, maybe in the future we will see something a bit more concrete for investors. Mozambique, I mean, Mozambique, as I said, it's a country that we have invested quite a bit already. We have a portfolio of in infrastructure alone around, I would say, $500 million between non-account and mobilization. We have a large project underway at the moment, 450-megawatt gas-fired project, a strategic project for the country and for the region. Lots of support from the World Bank Group as a whole. The World Bank financed the transmission line, IFC and other lenders, the generation project. So it's really something that we will continue to do, and we see opportunities because Mozambique, because of its geographic location, and I presume also because of the inefficiency in other countries around it to develop new projects, bring new generation on stream. Mozambique has been benefiting from that inefficiency, right? And so what we see is Mozambique becoming a real regional energy player for the SADC region. I mean, they already are in a way, but I think there is potential to grow that with new projects, which again, as I said, we have one underway under construction. We're currently financing the first wind farm in Mozambique. So that will be an interesting first for the country. And really because there is connectivity to the wider SAPP network, and because there is actually a deficit in the region now, particularly around what we call peak times, I think Mozambique is really positioning itself and capturing some of that opportunity. Then, of course, I mean, there is the gas economy, right? Again, Mozambique is already a gas player, exports gas to South Africa. And if these larger LNG projects come to fruition, it will be very interesting, again, to become this regional energy player, not only in electricity, but also in the gas economy, you know, by converting molecules into electricity and exporting, or by being a supplier of gas, not only for domestic projects, but also for, the neighbors. So Mozambique, I think it's a private sector friendly country. There's quite a bit to, there's a lot to be done in energy. I guess another project worth mentioning is the large hydro currently under development by the government and called the Mpandakua Hydro Project, which will bring another 1,300 megawatts of capacity. That has been a very interesting and transparent and competitive process around that project. So lots of kudos to the government of Mozambique. We now have a very, very solid consortium, which is now the lead investor and sponsor on that project. A consortium formed by EDF, by Total Energy, and by Sumitomo Corporation. So again, we're quite involved in that. From our side, we think there is still many opportunities in smaller generation projects to large ones. Transmission is also a topic I need to finish.
I was just wondering on the gas front. So obviously, Mozambique already exporting to South Africa, but also Angola already exports gas internationally to Brazil, to Japan, to China, and South Korea, in fact. So just sort of a question here. I'm wondering, in addition to supporting the regional needs, sub-Saharan Africa and Southern Africa, how do you think that perhaps Mozambique and Angola can support even Europe's energy crisis? In fact, do you think they're positioning themselves in a good place to support these other markets?
You mean the international markets or the regional markets?
In addition to the regional, are we well placed in these countries to support Europe, for example?
Well, definitely. I mean, Mozambique is definitely a great example that, based on where the world is heading at the moment and all the geopolitical tensions, Mozambique can be a very strong partner for what we call the West. The gas reserves are very significant. Politically, it's a relatively stable country and a country that, well positioned, and even from a geographical perspective, to supply not only the European markets but also the Asian markets, which are really today some of the largest users of gas. And then, of course, which I think may be known to some of you, Mozambique, as part of these large projects, has a very significant allocation of gas that has to go to the domestic market. You know, so we're talking about significant amounts of gas reserves that are earmarked for Mozambique and for the region. And so that in itself, you know, can boost, you know, industrial projects, you know, things like fertilizers, methanol, et cetera, which I think that's where we are actually quite eager to support the government. I mean, our objective is to develop the country itself, not necessarily, you know, helping them export molecules to other countries. Angola, I guess, also has been a historic producer of oil. You know, I guess with the energy transition, maybe, you know, it may become less relevant compared to gas, which is still seen as a transition fuel. But clearly, Angola is also you know, looking at that, and I'm sure that these rapprochements with the US and European partners is also due to that. Angola has very limited gas reserves, but nonetheless, it has one producing project, the Angola LNG project, and of course, I mean that, but it's a small drop in the ocean when one compares the overall needs of the developed world. But clearly, I mean, they are well positioned to support that. Mm-hmm. I think I'll stop here, Constanza, unless you have other questions or.
No, that's okay. I was just wondering if Renato, obviously you have, you know, extensive experience as well in Mozambique, if you wanted to comment a bit on that section as well, and including the energy sector.
No, indeed, but I was following your I was following Tiago, and I was actually considering how different the markets can be, because, for example, in Angola, we were involved in a number of projects which were designed to be implemented under an IPP perspective, but ended up not as IPP projects, but as EPC agreements, which in the end are going to be delivered to the public utility and run by state-owned companies. The point being that there is a difficulty in Angola in respect of the implementation of IPP projects, not from a legal standpoint per se, but I would say that from economic perspective, because in the end, once you have your electricity produced, it needs to be paid. And otherwise, if the government is not involved and does not support this type of projects, there is no market still that can support a tariff that is friendly for investment purposes. In Mozambique, it's not quite the same in terms of IPP projects. But I would agree that that there is a clear also a clear difference in terms of the needs of both countries, because Angola, in terms of generating more electricity, I would say that the need is, as Tiago very well pointed out, is on the transmission side. Mm-hmm. The investments on transmission on the electricity sector are quite low. Mozambique also needs those investments, but it still has a large potential to grow. It was also relevant from my perspective the issue of the strategic positioning of, for example, the European Union in respect of these countries. Because, for example, we see in terms of investment, we have several investments based in Europe for Angola in the electricity sector. And we see an interest from the EU itself in Angola, particularly in respect of the mining sector for raw materials. I think that Mozambique also has that potential in terms of the mining sector. And therefore, I think that the influence of the LNG project for EU faces some challenges, as Tiago also said, because there is the Asian market to benefit from that project, from the gas that's going to be supplied. But being a large portion of it earmarked for Mozambique's markets. I think this will trigger the economy itself and associated projects along the value chain. And for example, agriculture will be very interesting to see because for numerous reasons, but from one of those being the ability of agricultural projects also being capable of being involved in the cycle of the energy transition and being used for the production of renewable and other types of fuel to be used. So I think there is a great potential in several fields. And the outcome, I hope, will be very positive. For example, some instability that has occurred recently in Mozambique in respect of insurgencies are finally addressed, and this also supports the investment decisions. And I would give it back to you, Constanza.
Thank you. So we actually have a bit of time for a Q&A. One of the questions that came up was obviously these six countries, you know, farming and agriculture is very important. In fact, across the whole of sub-Saharan Africa, that's a key employer, and it's required in terms of, you know, achieving food security. And so the question here is, you know, what infrastructure investments should attract the national and global investors, but also what do you see as the impact of the Africa Free Continental Trade Agreement in terms of trading amongst the six countries? Perhaps Tiago or Renato, which one of you would like to take this first? Maybe Renato, since you've just addressed a bit of agriculture, I'll head over to you. Maybe just if you could highlight a bit of the, you know, how we see the African Continental Free Trade Agreement in enhancing even more the trade between these six countries.
Mm-hmm. No, I think these type of agreements are fundamental to make the economy's growth, because this allows the different players to benefit and the different countries involved to benefit from increased trading between themselves, and the flux of investment follows this. Wherever we have some flexibility or some, I would not say flexibility, but I would say where we have the ease of doing business, and wherever, when we are able and the countries are capable of exploring opportunities in terms of facilitating trade between themselves, mm-hmm. eliminating red tape and bureaucracies, this has an immediate effect on investment strategies along the region, because the market itself benefits from this enlargement of consumers. And as I pointed out, for example, in respect of Angola, the electricity sector, the difficulty in a project being bankable because of the lack of end consumers capable of supporting a given tariff. When we have solutions such as this one that allows the market to grow and to have access to more consumers, this benefits the economy as a whole. So I think this will bring new opportunities for investment and inclusively where you base your investments in which country.
Thank you, Renato. I can see Michelle is online. So I think we've very much reached the end of today's session. I think it's been quite insightful. And I'll hand over to Chantal to do our closing remarks.
Thank you, Constanza. I think you'll agree that this panel painted a clearer picture of an improving sentiment in many respects for Lusophone Africa. So thank you very much for the fantastic moderating, Constanza. And thank you, Renato and Tiago, for your thought-provoking views that we can now go and digest and consider in our planning for Lusophone Africa for this year. A quick reminder that the recording of this webcast will be available to share with your colleagues and other interested parties who may find it helpful. And our next webinar will take place on Thursday, and it will cover the decentralized finance revolution. And we will have ICAP, ETM, and Yellow Card participating in that. So that brings our Invest Africa Outlook for Lusophone Africa 2024, as well as our Outlook series overall for 2024 to a close. Thank you all for participating, and goodbye until next time.